Coming up this hour on No Limits, are you an Indiana artisan and maybe you don't even know it? Well, do you have a passion for creating art or food, or are you a trained professional? Or maybe you're just a hobbyist gone wild. Well, today we will explore the world of Indiana artisans, and we'll also tell you about an event where you can see, smell, touch, taste Indiana artisan-made products, and also talk to the people who created them. Joining us in our conversation will be Eric Freeman. He's the director of the Indiana Artisan Program, and two Indiana artisans, Jane Hoadley and Anita Hopper. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, sitting in for John Kroll this afternoon on No Limits. We'll be taking your phone calls as well, and we hope you have some questions for us. You can tweet us, you can Facebook us, or the old-fashioned way, on the phone. No Limits, all about Indiana artisans, coming up, but first, the news from NPR. Welcome to No Limits here on WFYI this afternoon. John Kroll is on vacation. I'm Jill Dittmeyer. I'll be sitting in, and we'll be having a conversation today about Indiana artisans. Now, the definition of an artisan is a skilled craft worker who makes or creates things by hand that may be functional or strictly decorative. For example, furniture, decorative arts, sculptures, clothing, jewelry, household items, tools, even mechanical mechanisms such as the handmade clockwork movement of a watchmaker. Now, back in 2008, the Indiana legislature kind of created a three-year loan of sorts. They started a program that showcased the skilled craft work of Indiana residents, and Indiana Artisan was born. The program was a success. It's now a 501c3 corporation. And today on No Limits, we are going to learn more about what it takes to be an artisan, how it's different than just a hobby, and how you can see, sample, and support the work of the over 320 official Indiana artisans. And joining us in studio this afternoon to do so is Eric Freeman. He's the director of Indiana Artisan. Welcome, Eric. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Jill. Great to be here.
And we have two of our artisans. We have Jane Hoadley, the owner, creator of J. Evelyn Confections. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Anita Hopper is here. She is the owner, creator of Refined Originals. Welcome, Anita. Glad to have you here.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And we want to hear from you, too, if you have a question for our artisans. Oh, that's easy for me to say, isn't it? Yeah. Give us a call at 866-476-3881. And we've got some people waiting for questions, but we're going to chat a little bit first. And I want to start with our artisans first, Eric. We're gonna get back to you. You're the guy in charge, but you'd be nowhere without these ladies.
Absolutely.
I have a feeling.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. And Anita, you are the owner of Refined Originals, which, love the name. I mean, it's a really creative kind of yin yang name. Mm-hmm. For recycled goods, reappreciating things, mm-hmm. and you specialize in leather.
I do.
And I understand that it all started with a thrift store leather jacket.
It did. I was almost attacked by one in the Goodwill store one day.
Now, what do you mean you were almost attacked by one?
I had such a strong feeling when I saw this jacket that was just hanging there. I thought, you know, that's exactly the way I would want my handbag to look and feel leather-wise. I like the sort of organic history to it. And I pulled it down and bought it for probably $10 back then and took it home. And it took a while for me to really get into it. But I told my family what I had in mind, and I was not planning on starting a business at all. I just wanted to see if I could create a handbag from that coat. And so that's really where it all started. I did create a handbag from that coat, and here I am.
Did you keep it or did you sell it?
I actually sold it.
And where did you get that skill, or was that just a joy of creating handbags?
Oh, well, it is a joy, but I I've been sewing my whole life, and I've always had a desire to create beautiful things that others would appreciate. And I did have a window treatment business for many years where I created window treatments and did all the, I had a home business for probably about 25 years. And that's where I learned sort of the engineering skills that it takes to make a handbag.
Meanwhile, to your right and now coming up in our listeners' ears, Jane, you decided to choose chocolate.
Why is that?
Well, I've since I was very young and I had my first Easy Bake Oven, I've always liked to cook, but I always had a curiosity about how things were made. So chocolate is one of those mysterious mediums that I will be a student of my entire life. And it was just, I went to a party and there was a gal there that I started talking to, and she had a little chocolate business and it interested me. And so I decided that perhaps I would look into chocolate and confections and just to see how they were made, see if I could do it. And I fell in love with it. And so my whole premise was so I could take something traditional and maybe give it a twist so that it would be current and relevant. And I made chocolates for my friends and family for probably the better part of 12 years before I ever decided that I would have a business.
And now I'm going to ask the big question for both of you. At what point did you decide, okay, we're going for business? It's going to be a business now.
Well, for me, I decided that J. Evelyn Confections would be a business when I was really coming to kind of a stall in my career. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to grow old with, but I knew that I didn't want to do what I was currently doing, which was retail management. And I had a death in the family that kind of woke me up, like, you don't know when your tomorrow is. And so that was 2008. And my husband said, what about the candy business? And I said, what about it? And that's when I decided that it would be a business.
And Anita, for you?
For me, it was when I bought my commercial sewing machine. My husband was gone for the day, and I remember clearly sitting there thinking I was trying to sew on my home machine, and sewing leather was so much different from sewing other fabrics that I thought to myself, you know, if you're going to really take this seriously, you've got to have the right machine. And so I went out that day, found a machine. By the time my husband got home, it was set up in my basement.
Husbands, take note of that. Be careful when you leave this afternoon. So obviously it's the ability, the right equipment, the right passion, a lot of perspiration and inspiration. And then, Eric, they land in your lap as the director of the Indiana Artisan Program. And it's really kind of a dual thing because there is an Indiana Artisan brand, and right. Then you have a lot of events, too.
Right. Right. They jury, they apply to Indiana Artisan, and we have a food jury that looks at the food applications like Jane's, the chocolatiers. And then we have an art jury panel that looks at all of the art applications. And we define art very broadly, like leatherwork, such as Anita's. And the panels change. We do it twice a year in May and November. The panels change every time. And applicants can apply as many times as they like, which is why we keep changing the panels up. So if it boils down to a certain panelist's tastes, those tastes are always different. And then the goal is to look at the very best of the best. Over the 8 years that Indiana Artisan has existed, only 17% of the applicants have been successful. And that's the bar is really high, but that's the goal. The state, like you said, started this program, and the goal from the outset was identify the highest quality art and foods coming from Indiana today, and then develop a brand that defines Indiana by its art and foods. And so to do that, we're looking at just, you know, the very best. So 83% of the applicants aren't successful. But like I say, they can reapply, and the jury panelists provide comments as to what they liked and what they didn't. And then the applicant, if they want to take those suggestions and reapply and tweaking what the panelists didn't like, they're welcome to. If they love what they do and think they do a great job at it, they're welcome to do that too.
And when you originally started the program, it wasn't just limited to food and art.
It was initially,
expanded
a little bit into
you
to
like
drink.
Candles and bath and
exactly.
Kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what we've done, as opposed to getting broader, we've gotten narrower. We've decided to stay just with food and art. And, you know, with all due respect to candles and soap products, and there's a lot of others, they're just neither food nor art. And they have a huge link to Indiana, which is a big piece of what the jury panels look at. You know, could Anita's purses be made just as easily in Nevada, say, as they could in Indiana? The panels weigh heavily. What makes this uniquely Indiana? Because it's that Indiana artisan brand that we're trying to develop and promote. Mm-hmm.
And that same thing kind of goes true for both of you ladies, too. How do you find your niche? Because let's face it, there are a lot of confectioners out there and there are a lot of purse makers mm-hmm. out there. How did you do it, Jane?
Absolutely. There's a lot of competition, which is always good. I think you have to, for me, decide that you want to make everything by hand. So we don't use big machinery. We do everything by hand. We make not only chocolate bonbons or truffles that you might be familiar with, but we also make all of our caramel, which is my specialty and my Indiana artisan. We make our toffee. We make absolutely everything fresh. We don't add extra preservatives. I use chocolates from around the world. And if you look at my work, I do almost everything by hand and not molded. So I just take a perspective in the category that I work in. And for me, that's hand done, using the creativity of looking at the trends in food, the trends in color for packaging, just following all those things. So maybe I make an almond toffee. A lot of people that like toffee, everyone's familiar with almond toffee, but what if you had a pecan lime toffee or a pecan spice toffee that had all the spices of a pumpkin pie? So that's what makes my brand uniquely different. I don't just have one type of caramel or toffee. You might find 12 on our menu at any given time.
Anita, do you have your husband helping you now, by the way?
I absolutely do.
Good.
He got on board. I could not do this without him.
But your niche?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm not sure I've found my niche. I think I'm still looking. I think that Indiana Artisan is part of that. And I think some of the connections that I make, especially at the marketplace, has really helped move me along in that direction. I keep exploring new things. I have all these things in my head that I want to make. And so it's hard for me. Eric will tell you this. It's hard for me to keep it narrow. In some ways, I might be too broad. So I'm actually always kind of looking and asking myself that question and asking others.
The name of your business, Refined Originals, leaves mm-hmm. it pretty open.
Well, it does. And I've actually, you know, I don't always use recycled leather. I do most of the time. But I have this, I don't know, I have all these things that I want to learn to do. And so, you know, it's a constant, trying to stay focused almost for me. So.
But Jane, my question to you is then, you do it all by hand, you do all the specialty stuff. Doesn't that limit your production and your ability to grow as a company?
Absolutely. My company is uniquely, the company pays for whatever it's going to do. So my husband affectionately says that I am on my slow way to making a million. And for me, it's comfortable. Slow growth is comfortable. So there's not a whole lot of capital that's infused. 2 years ago, we bought our first tempering machine, so we didn't have to temper chocolate by hand. And we've gotten a couple of tools that we still use by hand, but it's still a by-hand method. And when you have that kind of control over your product, you have to decide where you're going to sell it. So I do retail. I'm not a wholesaler. And therefore, I want to create a shop environment that would pull regionally. So like we want to go to Greenfield, Indiana, just for the chocolate shop. But it is a slow growth. You're absolutely right.
So you're really very much a destination business as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Anita, as you're still trying to find your niche, I'm guessing you're listening to a lot of the comments from the people that purchase your goods. What do they say?
Absolutely.
And how does that guide you?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite things that I do is making keepsake bags is what I would call them for people who have their own leather coats that maybe belong to someone special. And, you know, that's been hanging in their closet for 20 years. And that's one thing that I consistently do that I know nobody else is really doing. and they bring that special leather coat to me, and maybe it was their grandpa's, or, you know, it's there are all kinds of really, really neat stories that go along with some of the things that I've made. And so I know that's a direction that I want to continue in, and I think it just brings a lot of joy both to me and, you know, to the customer.
We're talking about Indiana Artisans in the program, and coming up after the break, we're going to let Eric talk again. We're going to talk about the upcoming marketplace. In fact, he's brought us a basket of goodies. We're going to delve into that and describe them to you. If you have a question, give us a call at 866-476-3881. You're listening to No Limits on 90.1. And that is the phone number to call today for our episode on No Limits. We're talking about Indiana Artisans. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, sitting in for John Krall, who's on vacation this afternoon. And Eric Freeman is the director of Indiana Artisan. And Eric, as we've been hearing from the ladies, they've become Indiana Artisans because it is a brand. You have a panel that chooses people. And I know that once someone becomes an Indiana Artisan, there's a sticker that kind of goes on their goods that they can use. For how long are you once an artisan, always an artisan?
Exactly.
Okay.
Once your work juries in, it is always part of the brand. We do say we reserve the right to take a look at it from time to time just to make sure it remains as high quality as it was when it juried in. But in the 8 years we've done this, it's all been good.
And on your jury, you have some of the artisans that are involved in that as well.
That's unique
and probably pretty important.
It is. And of course, we couldn't start out that way because there were no artisans in the beginning. So initially, it was all art professors, artists, art collectors, gallery directors, those kind of folks. But increasingly, we do have artisans on the panel, with the thought being if they are the best of the best, then they certainly know what that looks like. And so, yes, increasingly jewelers, potters, fiber artists are joining our jury panels.
And you hope they don't have a grudge against somebody.
Now, Jill, that never happens.
Or you end up with some of that rejected project on your doorstep.
That's right. That's right.
I'm sure that never
nothing
happens.
Worse.
No. But this next weekend is the Indiana Artisan Marketplace that you guys have been having for a number of years. It's very, very popular out at the Indiana State Fairgrounds in the Exposition Hall. And this is a great opportunity for people to come and learn more about these Indiana Artisan products. Because I think people now, because you're in a lot of the grocery stores and things, people now have seen the label and they know this means something special, but they're not quite sure. But they can come to this event and find that out. In fact, you've brought some objects here that maybe you can describe for us a little bit, since we are radio.
Right, yeah. I knew it was a visual and that was a mistake. But I guess at first it would be important to say, you know, you've listened to Jane talk about truffles and bonbons and toffee and caramels that she makes.
Pecan lime specifically.
Yeah, pecan lime, exactly. It's a sea salt caramel? Yeah, sea salt caramel. Oh my gosh. So Jane is known for that. But at the marketplace, all of the food artisans and the wine artisans have samples that people can taste, and all of that is at no cost. And then also, you know, we've heard Anita talk about what she does with coats, but she also does things with upholstery and leather briefcases. It's not all just coats that
right,
she turns into.
Because you're still trying to find your niche.
That's right. So
come help Anita.
Come and be her niche. But no, come and see what she makes, because it is stunning. She has some oversized leather pillows that one of these times I'm going to buy. That just are stunning. And I don't know what their original or their first life was, but their second life is certainly beautiful. So all of the artisans have, the food artisans have samples. The art artisans are there themselves. So you can come and talk to the maker, see what the makers make. But what we have here, hand-woven rugs by a woman in Brown County, Chris Gustin. And Jill, this is a fascinating story.
It's beautiful, too. The colors are like the colors of the rainbow, but aqua, orange, red, purple, pink.
I'm glad you said that. Do you know what this was?
Woven.
Just like Anita, Chris works solely in recycled materials. Do you have any idea what this was?
I'm going to guess beach towels.
Oh, it was socks.
Oh, my heavens.
These were socks. And it is
really
vibrant.
It's what happens to the other one. They run away, and
exactly.
They find this Indiana artisan.
And they become
say,
rugs.
Save me.
Exactly. But Chris does all kinds of wild stuff. She takes men's ties. Goodwill will keep a man's tie on its rack for a year, and then after that, it gets rid of it. Chris has a contract where all of the men's ties go to Brown County, and she
Smart.
Weaves rugs out of ties. She also, you know, your Indianapolis Star in the morning comes in a plastic wrapper. She ties those together and weaves those to make a rug that for your front porch that's totally water repellent. And, you know, those wrappers are green and yellow and orange. So she can make a really pretty rug out of those star or any newspaper wrapper. And, of course, you know, you can sit out there in the rain and do just fine. So Chris will be there. She will actually be weaving. 20 of the artisans will be demonstrating, and Chris is one of them. I doubt she'll have any plastic, but she weaves both Saturday and Sunday. So she might have socks and do rugs like this.
I think also, you know, people want to recycle and take care of things and give back to the land. And sometimes people don't have any idea how to do that. This is a great way to promote your recycling, your passion for recycling by supporting someone who recycles.
Right. Totally made of socks. And it's beautiful. I mean, I wish you all could see it because it really is. And then it's going to sound like all the artisans are recyclers, and that's not the case. But
there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, no, not at all. But I just want to say we're all into recycling.
I think that's probably why we're here, is that our ancestors did recycle everything.
Good point.
And we need to continue to do that.
Megan Winno is another leather worker, but she makes journals, and she uses recycled leather, and she makes the paper that the journals, and I've got one here, I'm kind of flipping through it.
And this does, it almost looks like a Bible in a way, the leather. It's very worn and warm looking and kind of a chocolate brown, and then you've opened it up, and inside the paper is very cream, and the edges are kind of rough.
Yeah.
And you can tell that it's lived a previous life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But in a gently worn way.
But wouldn't you want this?
Actually,
this is mine. I loved this so much. She hand binds it. It's a journal that's been hand bound with handmade paper and recycled leather that she's then customized to be the cover of
this
book.
What do you use yours for?
I use it as a journal.
Oh, so you actually write in it?
Yeah, and then Indiana Artisan, I bought one for Indiana Artisan. We use it as a sign-in book at events. Everybody who comes in always says, "Ooh, that's neat," and it kind of gives me an opportunity to say yes, and this is actually a piece of work from an Indiana Artisan.
The paper is so thick, though, you could almost use it as like a file. You could put keepsakes and things in it, or postcards for people who still send postcards and things like that, or kids, as they're out walking around the neighborhood, find flowers or leaves they might want to press in there,
that's
too.
A great
idea. It's really...
Yeah,
more
and she's
got
you can't see it, but she's got a little old skeleton metal key that is the latch, so it could hold leaves in there and keep everything pretty safe.
Are you thinking of things, Anita? Are you like little light bulbs going off in your head?
Well, actually, I was thinking of one thing that I wanted to say about one of the materials that I use. I bought all the leather out of an airplane, all the seat leather out of an airplane. I had the opportunity to do that. No, it wasn't. Someone that salvages aircraft called me, heard what I do, and asked me if I would be, you know, interested in this leather. And it came in a huge amount. And I make...
The FedEx guy earned his dollar that day.
Exactly. I am making all kinds of travel cases out of this, carry-ons and men's stop kits and things like that, and it's all made out of that airplane seat leather.
I have to ask you about the pillow that Eric referred to earlier. What were they previous to the leather pillows?
I'd like to know that, too.
Well, I actually think that maybe the one that you're talking about was probably upholstery leather.
Uh-huh.
I think it's upholstery leather, but I'm not positive which ones you were talking about. So,
we also have an adorable little chick here. It looks like it's part wood, hand-carved. It looks like there's a real piece of twig that it's sitting upon, a real feather, some leather, some beads. It looks like as if it's hand-painted. This is a lot of work in this little piece. It kind of fits in the palm of your hand, Eric.
Isn't that neat? And, you know, in its first life, it was a gourd. This is Rosie Bolte, also in Brown County. And Rosie paints with a brush that has one little and you can
point.
Tell, Jill, take a look at how fine.
Very fine.
It's got feathers on it. It has eyes. It has a little necklace around. It's all painted on the gourd. And when a lot of people think gourd art, they think, oh, gourd art. You know, you picture a Santa Claus kind of on a thing that looks like a gourd. But you wouldn't know that was
a
gourd.
No, never in a million years till after you set it. And then you can kind of see where the top of the head and the beak, obviously, were the crook of the gourd and everything. But she's obviously hollowed it out and hand-painted it.
And she grows these. Her studio in Brown County is in an 8-acre gourd garden. And it's this gorgeous little cottage. And if you come in the summer, there's just gourd gardens all over the place. So in blooming time, gourds bloom in orange. Just stunning. And then she dries them in the wintertime and paints them year-round. And And the neat thing about the marketplace, though, is Rosie is there. Again, the maker is there. So she can tell you about her farm and how she does this. And this is her full-time job.
And seeing this little bird, and since we just have passed Easter, it reminded me of Peeps, which made me think about your confections again there, Jane. Where do you get your inspirations for your creations? Do you dream them up at night? Do you do a lot of reading? Do you visit other businesses?
I would say all of the above, but I really like to take something familiar and experiment with flavors. So, for instance, the pecan lime toffee, I love key lime pie, and I thought, I wonder how that would translate into toffee. And as I was thinking, I thought, well, I'll have to put in some roasted pecans and fresh lime so you really get a nice zip, and it worked. But a lot of times I also look at what restaurants are serving on their dessert menu. And I do a margarita caramel, and it's my twist on a margarita. So it's fresh lime, cranberry, and then we finish it with a citrus salt. And it's super tangy. And I actually was in a restaurant, and they had a cranberry lime scone. Mm. And I thought, oh, I wonder if that would work in a caramel. So a lot of times my inspiration comes from just being out and about and trying different things and liking it and seeing if it'll work.
Now, you mentioned margarita, which is made from distilled alcohol. Mm-hmm. And Indiana now is allowing local makers to distill their own spirits.
Right.
Do we have some Indiana artisans distillers now?
We do. There are three, two vodka makers and a bourbon maker also in Brown County. Brown County is the hot topic today. But four different kinds of bourbons all made with Indiana grains. And again, that link to Indiana is an important piece of our puzzle.
I also imagine that all of the jury shows up to judge the wine and the spirits.
Well, Jill, you in particular would appreciate
would.
When a winery comes to apply. Yes, we have sommeliers and cicerones, which is a word that I did not know prior to Indiana artisans.
Beer expert.
Exactly.
Fancy word for beer expert.
The sommelier of the beer world. So, yes, we have people who really know their way around it. But then, of course, there's that everyman juryer that just loves it when the case of wine comes in.
But that's also very important, too, to have people who are experts in their field judge these objects, because sometimes Indiana products get a bad rap.
Right.
Indiana wine's got a bad rap for a long time. They're actually quite delicious.
Couldn't agree more.
And winemaking is farming and chemistry. It's a lot of work.
That's right.
The same with growing gourds, as you said.
Yeah.
Sometimes people think of gourd art. Ooh, oh my. But you have experts in their field that come in and actually judge these things that make people take a second look at these products
that
maybe have been overlooked before.
True. The marketplace really, we call it a showcase. A lot of people call events like this, a show. But it really is a showcase of the best coming from Indiana. And what's really neat is, like I've said a couple times, the makers are there. So if you have questions, how did you make that? Or, how do you grow a gourd like that? Or, Anita, where do you get your leather? They know because, it's not ordered in and you're talking with the person who's made it.
And we are talking about the Indiana Artisan Marketplace that's coming up this weekend. And a couple of our Indiana artisans are here in studio with us. Jane Hoadley from J. Evelyn Confections, Anita Hopper from Refined Originals, and the gentleman to my right is Eric Freeman. He is the director of Indiana Artisan. If you have a question that you'd like to ask one of our guests, please give us a call. It's 866-476-3881. Okay, Eric, you've got a couple of other items here. You do have it looked like a plain gourd, but I just tried to lift it up and
it's actually
I could
a
crack
pear,
somebody
Jill.
On the head.
Isn't that beautiful? It's
it
a pear.
It is beautiful. Oh, it is a pear.
And it's not made in Brown County, thankfully. No. Rick Greiner, the pear man, he calls himself. Rick at thepearman.com is his email address. All he makes, you asked Anita about her niche. Rick just makes ceramic pears. That's all he makes. And he does a fair amount of business. I've talked with him a couple times about maybe expanding into other fruits. Not interested. But he has, huge pears, very small pears, psychedelically colored pears. This one's a beautiful white pear that actually is about the size of a pretty fat pear. But that's what he makes, and he does a heck of a job at it. And it's a beautiful pear and makes good sales.
You mentioned we've been talking a lot about Brown County, but you do have the top 10 counties where most of your artisans come from. And Brown County's down the list. Marion County's number one. Hamilton, Monroe, Brown, Tippecanoe.
Yeah.
So you really do reach all around the state. People make product all over the state.
We do. When we started, the Office of Community and Rural Affairs funded Indiana Artisan initially. And as you can imagine by that name, their mission or goal for me was to get outside of Marion County, go way outside of Marion County. The Indiana Artisan is not an art program or a food program. It's an economic development program. It was Lieutenant Governor Skillman's idea initially. And the point was to find artisans. She considered artisans place-based assets. And I know that sounds kind of cold, but when you think about it, it's a great way to refer to Anita and to Jane and to all the other artisans. They are in a place already, and they are an asset where they are already. Let's leave them there, but let's help them build their business so that it helps the economy wherever they are, in Logansport or Anderson or down in Madison, wherever. And so, yes, the artisans come from 63 Indiana counties now, which is more than two-thirds of the state, which is great.
And has it helped? Anita, since you've become an Indiana artisan, have you seen an uptick in your business, or how has it affected you?
It absolutely helps. For one thing, the marketplace is a great place for me to sell all my various different things that I'm trying to figure out which one maybe I need to narrow down to. But the people I meet there are sometimes very helpful as far as getting me maybe, for wholesale contacts. And I've recently, I guess it was at last year's marketplace, I met someone who actually has her store in Greenfield, Red Banana. She has been helping me with things that I have needed to learn for a long time about selling wholesale. And we've just kind of hit it off. She's selling my products there. But she's also helping me learn for the first time how to really price my products so that I can sell wholesale. So that's, things like that are just invaluable. I meet people every time there's a marketplace that helps me kind of walk a little bit further down the path. And I always do really well, just selling products there.
And how about you, Jane, having that Indiana Artisan sticker on your product?
It has absolutely helped me. Like I said, my business pays for the business, so there's no loans. So when you are looking at marketing opportunities, just like today, I get an opportunity to be on a radio show, talk about my business. I wouldn't have had that opportunity had I not been, or my products not juried into Indiana Artisan. I've been on TV on several different shows promoting Indiana Artisan and my own business, and I wouldn't have had those opportunities to grow my business. And it almost, you start out and you have a business, and it kind of validates you.
Especially since it's your peers that are elevating you.
Absolutely. And like Anita, you never know who you're going to meet at Marketplace. And my business model is mostly corporate and business to business. So there has not been one Marketplace that I haven't gotten a new corporate client. And that's important to the growth.
And I bet you
business.
Have a lot of people that come up and say, my grandma used to make this.
Absolutely. And hopefully I've improved on their grandma's recipe.
Collecting inspirational recipes as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure as we talked about there, because there are other confectioners at the event too, do you talk amongst yourselves?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good friends. Absolutely good friends. And it kind of helps you to go to a marketplace to understand how other people are doing their business. I know my very first marketplace, this will be my sixth one this year, but my very first marketplace, all my product was boxed. And so for someone to put out, $25 for a box of candy and they don't know your product, you really kind of have to adjust the way you're doing business. And I noticed that another chocolatier was selling by the piece. Uh-huh. So the next year I thought, well, I'm going to sell by the piece and sell by boxes. And when that happened.
And nobody can ever buy just one.
That's right.
We'll be back with more of No Limits and the Indiana Artisan Program right after this. That's the number, and you've heard the address for the Facebook and the Twitter. On No Limits, we're waiting to hear your question for our Indiana artisans who are joining us this afternoon. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, sitting in for John Krall, who is on vacation. And we are speaking with Jane Hoadley, the owner, creator, and master confectioner of J. Evelyn Confections. Anita Hopper with Refined Originals. She likes leather, but she's looking for other items to craft as well. And, of course, Eric Freeman, the concert master of the upcoming Indiana Marketplace, the guy that puts it all together and make sure that everybody comes to the State Fairgrounds next weekend and gets to see some of Indiana's finest artisans in the food and art world. And as we were talking before, you brought some goodies for us, some items that are going to be there from some of the different vendors. And we have another one here that's beautiful. Looks like cards of some sort.
It is. These are cards. It's quilted paper from an artisan, Michelle Pollock, who lives in Columbus and works from a studio in her home. And she was a bookbinder in her former life and got into this where she can use, kind of like Anita, kind of use her sewing and her binding abilities. But she quilts paper. And these are various layers of paper. This is a bird on a limb. And the limb and the bird are all made out of different kinds of papers, and it's sewn on these cards. So these are note cards, but she makes bookmarks and 2D art that, you know, you can hang on your wall frame and hang on your wall. She's got a series now of jesters that are all made out of different kinds of paper, and they look like marionettes, and it's all paper that is sewn and stitched onto more paper, and it's a beautiful look. I mean, heck of a job, didn't you think?
And this fascinates me, too, because here we have someone who is sewing and using that skill, and the same with you, Anita, a sewing machine. Now, a million years ago when I was in middle school, we had to take home and economics class, and we used a sewing machine. But I wonder how many kids up these days know how to use a sewing machine. Why should we all know how to have good sewing skills?
Well, that's a good question. I think that it's actually a growing thing. I think maybe the trend was, you know, kind of lost for a while, but now it's picking back up again. I notice there are, you know, kind of more places around where you can learn sewing skills. You know, it's something that can be used for so many different things. And, you know, for probably 20, 25 years, I used those skills for my window treatment business. And I've completely gone a different direction. And, you know, I've made clothing in the past and done all sorts of different things. I think that it's just sort of a basic skill that if you like it, you know, you never know what you might be able to do with that.
We've talked about a lot of the highlights and the benefits of being an Indiana artisan, but I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. Jane, you're the owner, the maker, the creator. That means you're the boss. You have to hire and fire the employees. That's
yes.
A tough job.
Yeah, it is. My retail management for all of my life until 8 years ago has come in very handy with those skill sets. It used to just be me. I was by myself. I was making the candy. And I now have two full-time employees and a part-time employee. And still friends and family help me, but you do begin to wear different hats. And my older sister helps me with the business in kind of bouncing off ideas. And she, you know, we have conversations about the business, and she says, Jane, you're going to have to figure out what part of the business you want to direct, because your business is growing and you're not going to be able to do everything you were when you first started. So,
and that's a hard talk to have with yourself,
isn't
it?
Absolutely. Because, you know, many people have a small business, and when they get to that point, they sell their business because they don't want to lose control of every aspect. But I take baby steps, and just to allow in the kitchen, one of my full-time people makes all of our toffee now. I still make all of the caramels, and then the other full-time person and myself split the duties of making the truffles. And that frees me up to be able to plan and execute what we're going to do as far as advertising or different shows that we're going to do or get out and meet the clients. I now have a team that takes care of all of my business-to-business shows. And so you have to allow yourself to back up and really train and develop your staff to let go so that you can grow.
And both of you kind of, you had the skills, when, like I said, you had the passion, but there is that crucial jumping off point that people really need to think seriously about. Is it just a hobby that I
Absolutely.
Really enjoy, or is this really a business?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough decision, too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would think that being part of the Indiana Artisan Program, once again, you've got peers mm-hmm. and people that you can talk with to maybe test the waters, maybe some people that come to the marketplace that are thinking, everybody tells me I should be running a restaurant or I should be doing this. Boy, if we had a dollar for every one of those conversations, your foundation would be flourishing, wouldn't
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, too, Indiana Artisan has been very beneficial to me because they offer different classes throughout the year on things that relate to your business or how to do better at the marketplace. There's just lots of opportunities, not just that sticker to put on your goods. They offer a lot of learning opportunities.
Let's talk about trends a little bit, since it's been around for 8 years. Let's start first with you, Eric. From the first group of products that came before the judges panel 8 years ago compared to now, what have you seen?
Wow. You know, I the only thing that comes quickly to mind is the proliferation of jewelry artists. A lot more jewelry applications come in, and we have some stunning jewelry.
And I'm guessing made from a lot of different products that maybe you never thought of before.
Absolutely. For example, is the artist a glass artist or a jewelry artist? Because they hand make the glass, and then they shape it into something that fits onto a ring or onto a pendant. And then does the metal work around that. And so oftentimes it's like, what medium are you really in? A lot of people getting into jewelry.
And are trends, are they important to you, Anita? Do you keep your eye on what people are buying, what's in fashion, or do you just really stay true to, mm-hmm. you see this piece of material and you think, I have got to make this from this?
I definitely watch trends. I'm on Pinterest a lot, and every purse, everything I see like that, I think, I wonder if I could make that. I wonder how that's put together. And, it's not that I'm wanting to, copy what someone else is doing, but it's more about, trends in leather types or, is it the boho look or, what can I do? What am I good at? It's like I take a few things and ideas and kind of mull those over and then figure out, well, what can I really do and make it my own
and still make a living.
Well, exactly. And it's very, very difficult to do this. And in fact, I'm coming off a year where I lost money, which is the first time in 10 years that that's happened to me.
That's tremendous, actually.
It really is.
It's very
unusual.
Well,
it is. And, of course, I'm feeling a little bit bad about that. But I'm sort of redoubling my efforts to, make sure that doesn't happen again and trying to, figure out what I need to change. And it wasn't because I didn't sell product. I sold a lot of product last year that I made all myself. And I should say I made it all myself, but I do have a couple people, including my sister, that helps me a lot with the things that I make. But
supportive family is very important.
I really do try to make things that are on trend as far as fashion is concerned. And, sometimes it's more difficult when you're starting with the material and you have to sort of then figure out what can I do with this particular piece of leather or this leather coat that I have to cut apart first and, yet try to figure out, a way to utilize that so that it's beautiful and useful.
And Jane, boy, food trends. Oh, my gosh. Blink and they change.
They do.
Wow.
I think I have the great privilege of having a core group of products. And then every single season, we will change it up. So I was speaking of the margarita caramels earlier, and people want that year round. We only make them in the spring and summer. And that allows me then to be creative and not to get stale with my products. And then they can look forward to something that they really like. And I think sometimes in food, people put together different flavor profiles just to make a shock value. But we really try to take something very familiar and then just give it a spin or a twist.
I guess there's not a lot of spitting in the tasting. Once again, I think you probably have the volunteers.
Jill, we absolutely, in the shop, that is what we do.
So it is like wine. Yeah.
Absolutely. Every caramel that comes out, we have to taste the batch. And I taste the caramel, and I make sure it's got the right texture, right taste, and I spit it out. If it were cookies, that might be harder for me.
But. Future side business there, maybe.
That's right.
No, keep that one for yourself. But when you are creating these new flavors and that kind of thing, so what is trendy now? Like, what are people buying now? As opposed to, you've been around for 8 years, too.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you have your core stuff, but...
Mm-hmm. I think old has become new. So we have the salted caramels are very stable. Everyone is familiar with salted caramels. When I first started making salted caramels, very few people were making salted caramels. So this year, some of our newer flavors, Bananas Foster. So it's a very familiar dessert, and we've translated that very well into a caramel. So you can look forward to that. Mm. And then for our Bicentennial, I don't know if corn is trending, but corn is one of our...
It is if you call it grits. Or
corn,
polenta.
Of course, is one of our chief exports in Indiana. So you will get to try my Bicentennial Caramel, which is a corn cream caramel.
Ooh, so, thanks to look forward to.
Sounds very different, but it's delicious.
We have a question from one of our Facebook friends, Gary Bates, who I think it's his birthday today, too. He says, I have a non-crass question. Can someone please let aspiring artists know just how much money is used to sustain a successful art? Mm. It's like ballpark a figure. What did it take to start your business and get it going and to kind of keep it going?
So for me, I left my job and I decided that I would start this business, and I had $5,000. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of money, because we didn't have $5,000. And I thought, you know what? We're just going to take that $5,000 and see what happens. So we started our business in September of 2008. And I followed a model that I had in my previous job, where we went to businesses and set up shop. And by January of 2009, we had paid back that $5,000 loan. So I think it truly depends on what your medium is.
And Eric, you can probably speak to that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jane has several times just today talked about slow growth and some artisans. And I think Anita's business is the same way. These two are similar in that. But there are big operations that have had work jury into Indiana artisans, such as Oliver Winery. You know, so the Oliver answer would be very different than Jane and Anita. So I'm not sure there is one answer. You know, if you're sitting on a pile of money and want to blow through it all to get your business started, you know, good for you. But if you don't have a lot, you know, and $5,000 is all you have, you know, Jane has been successful with that.
And there's also the reality that this is going to be a 24/7.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard to find that work-life balance. It's, I think, a lot different when you're doing something that you absolutely love, but you still very much need a work-life balance, and that is, it's difficult.
And let me hop in here, and I don't know if you noticed, but she said it's important to do something that you love, and then she also earlier said, when I quit my job, as if this is not her job. And I love that, and that's very typical of the artisans. This is a passion. It is not a job, and you're right. So money, not so important. What's important is doing what I love and doing it well and being rewarded through sales and appreciation for that work.
Do you think any of that is a Hoosier quality as well? Do you think we Hoosiers really like to work hard and do something that we love?
I do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure.
We are talking about the Indiana Artisan Program this afternoon on No Limits. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, sitting in for John Krall. If you have a question, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881 or send it to our Facebook page, as Gary did. And we would love to try to answer your question for you. We talked about that at the beginning of when you first started Indiana Artisan, there were a lot of different categories and kind of narrowed that down a little bit. What about the future? How are you going to, or are you going to be able to bring in technology? And a lot of these art galleries and shows that I go to a lot of time, it's multimedia. And who's to say that they're not an artisan?
Oh, yeah, we certainly wouldn't say that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know is the answer. We're only into visual art. We don't jury performing art. And we stick pretty much with art and food, and we define both of those very broadly. I mean, you know, we've talked about quilted paper and a guy who makes just ceramic pears. But it's metalwork and glass, and we really define art broadly. Same with foods. I mean, we've gotten into drink now, kombucha. There's mm-hmm. an artisan up in Muncie that makes Presto kombucha, whose work has juried in. The wines, the distilled liquors. So we continue to expand, but just within art and food.
Yeah, what they bring you judge and right, and make the answer. Once again, we want to remind everybody that the marketplace is next weekend, April 9th and 10th, at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. I'm guessing website, they can go to the website?
Absolutely. IndianaArtisan.org has all the details right there on the front page.
And all the vendors that are going to be there as well. Jane, I'm going to ask you first. I know you're there. You're going to be there selling your product, but I'm sure there's a couple booths that you know you have to go see. What would they be?
I love Saks. They do... soaps.
She said Saks.
Yeah.
Still
S-A-C-S. Uh-huh. I always have to have something from their booth. Eric already told you about Binding Bee. That's one of my favorites. And the sisters. Oh. I have to have some of their cookies.
Can I tell you a neat story?
Oh, yeah.
The sisters at Ed and Ferdinand have had a bakery called Simply Divine, which is great when you think nuns have a bakery called Simply Divine. They've changed the name just within the last few months. But they have a buttermint cookie. And to go back to the products linked to Indiana, they grow the mint that they use in the buttermint cookie. So they're at a marketplace, and they're next, unfortunately not to Jane, but they're next to another chocolatier. Over the course of the weekend, they talk, and they talk about, wouldn't it be great to have a chocolate-covered buttermint cookie? So the chocolatier advises
partnered them together
on how to cover the buttermint cookie, and so now they have a buttermint cookie and a chocolate-covered
version. It's a Hoosier tradition. It's that giving and receiving kind of thing. It's all at the Indiana Artisan Marketplace next weekend. Thank you to Eric Freeman for joining us,
thank you, Jill.
To Jane and Anita, thank you for being with us as well, and we wish you continued success with both of your businesses. And thank you at home for listening today on No Limits. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, sitting in for John Krall. Have a great day.